Well, good morning. I'm going to give you a little overview of the USDA climate change hubs and some of my perspectives about how they're going to operate or how they're supposed to operate, because we have at least one hub chair in the room who can give you a reality check on it. Okay, where are we? Well, climate change and agriculture. We know climate change is here. It's got some credibility with the mainstream America, and the farmers are starting to say, hey, you know, what's going on with the weird weather? And so the science has been proceeding for quite a while, and the way I talk to people about climate change research is there's the mitigation aspect, greenhouse gas management, and that translates to nutrient management, as we all know, because the key issue is nitrous oxide, and another is methane, because of their increased global warming capacity. And then the other part of it is increased soil carbon sequestration, which, as we all know, translates into soil health and soil quality. The other side of the coin is adaptation, or effects and adaptation research, and that's basically understand the effects, and they're biotic and abiotic. When I talk about abiotic, I'm talking about temperature, precipitation. When you talk about biotic, it mostly looks at some of the combined effects of temperature and precipitation changes, especially variability, and then there's that CO2 effect on weeds and so forth, and just general changes of habitat on pathogens and insects and so forth. Everybody's squinting. I guess I'll make my slides a little bigger next time. Sorry. And of course, the biotic effects are the ones that we are concerned about hitting the bottom line of agriculture, increasing the cost of production. So the issues, how do we adapt to it? And we're thinking it has to take a systems approach. And then there are some opportunities out there that are afforded. Maybe some of the more northern regions can start growing some food, like Alaska, for example. And so we need to be looking at some of those. So, and all these are concerned about not only production, but ecosystem services. Well, where are we with the sciences? Well, I think mitigation science is pretty well on its way. We have GraceNet, we have CHASMs, we have the Global Research Alliance looking at ways of sharing the information and capabilities and hopefully doing some capacity building and education. We have models out there. We have some foundational data that's been collected. However, although we still have a lot to learn, especially with different systems, like specialty crops, there is a growing body of knowledge that enables some options for actions by producers, and hopefully some of the policymakers are getting a little more informed. The cover of the document I have here is USDA Publication 1939. It's a pretty good compendium. It's pretty thick on options for greenhouse gas mitigation. You can download it off the USDA website. Effects and adaptation. Well, we expect the effects to intensify beyond the next 20 or 30 years especially. The effects will continue, both the abiotic and biotic effects, having an impact on yield quantity as well as nutritional quality, a growing concern. Actually, it's been around for a while in terms of the need to feed, 9.5 billion people by 2050. There's also concern about the effects on the cost of production, and all the way from the need for additional controls for insects and pathogens and weeds to bigger and bigger equipment to get into the field in those shorter windows to plant and harvest. Unexpected extreme events of rainfall events when you least expect them that foster the growth of pathogens and so forth, and just damage to crops. Another take-home message is generations. This climate change thing is new. It's a new challenge, and we expect future farming to take climate and weather into consideration probably more than they ever have. One of the few things that I say to production groups, industry groups, is, you know, we've been farming for the mean for a long time. start paying attention to the extremes as you continue into the future. So as the climate is changing, so will a perspective of the producers and industry and researchers on how to approach all this. It all comes down to risk management. There'll be more weather and climate, especially the variability being a greater concern. Another thing is the natural resources base is at risk. Erosion due to wind and water, especially with these extreme events. The soil, the water, and the air with increased wind erosion from the drought conditions. This is something that kind of gets lost in the discussion in terms of mainstream discussions in the media. Also, there's a concern about ecosystem services. What's happening to our pollinators? What's happening to biodiversity out there? So it's an all-encompassing challenge that's going to take a lot of resources to address. So with the situation at hand that adaptation science is in its infancy, basically we have bits and pieces on how to approach it, but we don't have holistic, coordinated strategies. However, things are happening right now, and we need to bring together some solutions and resources as soon as possible. And one of the things that's been said about USDA and our programs is that we have a structure of research to extension that enables us, when things work, to really holistically tackle a problem, conduct the research, develop some solutions, and then transfer it out to the users and stakeholders in hopefully an efficient manner. Given this scenario, the USDA climate change hubs and the sub-hubs were developed. There are 7 regions, there are 7 major hubs, there are a number of sub-hubs to handle some of the more regional concerns. I think this is interesting that these hubs have arisen as climate change science is downscaling. We hear a lot about the need for downscaled climate projections. I think that's where climate science is going, especially with respect to agriculture. We now need to bring it down to a regional level and look at some of the science and interpret it in terms of what specific decisions need to be made by producers as well as policymakers. Okay? The hubs are the result of collaboration, and in my experience being in USDA for 20 years, it's unprecedented between the different agencies. So the mission of the hubs is to develop and deliver science-based, region-specific, bringing that scale issue down, information and technologies to agricultural and natural resources managers that will enable climate-smart decision-making and to provide assistance to enable land managers to implement those decisions. So there's a research to extension component of the hubs. And the key words that I think about when I'm addressing hub issues is focus and fast track. So we need to get some solutions out there. We need to make sure that we're asking the right questions as researchers. And we need to be able to interpret this so that our extension people can get some things out that can be used. So the way the hubs and the sub-hubs are structured, that there is an ARS, Forest Service, and NRCS presence at each one of them. So it's very much a team approach. There are other agencies involved. APHIS is involved. RMA is involved. FSIS is involved. And there's a lot of other agencies that once they hear about what's going on in the hubs, they are coming to the table. There is an executive director. Currently, it's Randy Johnson of the Forest Service, and there's an executive committee. The two other principals are with NRCS and ARS. Currently, I'm one of those. And the Climate Change Program Office that's under the Office of the Chief Economist also has a presence. So it's the four of us who are the primary drivers. However, the other agencies that have an interest in these climate change hubs are on the committee. Currently, the funding is bring your own resources. Okay? sorry to say, it was an unfunded mandate. We're doing what we can to make these things go. I know that the NIFA program leaders are putting language in their announcements of opportunity to consider supporting the missions of the hubs. If you put in a proposal, especially one that runs from research to extension. So there's no separate pot of money, although we view the need for collaboration and communication as an integral part of it. So there have been talks up front with other federal agencies. There have been very strong connections made with NOAA and their climate centers, and then the USGS and their climate centers, and then extension within each of the states. And each one of the hub directors is charged with reaching out and making connections so that we can do the research and get the solutions out there when they're ready. These things are outwardly focused. It's not an instrument of USDA headquarters to perform things for them, although the hub directors will have an issue with that, if that's really happening. But it's basically an outward-focused endeavor. And the way things operate is that each USDA agency contributes within the guidelines of its mission. ARS will do the research. NRCS will do some of the packaging and the outreach and then extension. Forest Service Research is also engaged, as well as their extension programs. Obviously, it takes all of us to do this. And one distinctive feature of the USDA climate change hubs that's different from, say, the NOAA and USGS centers is that we're looking at mitigation and adaptation. So where the other groups are mainly research-focused or in support of their own programs. They're trying to provide feedback to their action programs and their research programs. The model for the operation of the hubs is a supply chain. You have the foundational research that leads to some applied research on a regional basis, that downscaling, that focus. There will be some packaging and development, translation of things, like what I call, if you have a model that's written in a scientific language, I call an ugly version of it. You know, it has to be put into the package that can be used by someone other than a detailed scientist who developed the models. Then there's outreach, extension, and program report support that goes out to the stakeholders, farmers, ranchers, and forest managers. The key word for the stakeholders here is working lands, whereas some of the other agencies are focused on maybe global issues and other components of society, transportation, urban areas, and so forth. So there's feedback from the stakeholders to each component, and hopefully this will continue to increase the dialogue between the players in the agencies and the universities. We are reaching out to the universities very strongly. There's some very strong partnerships. There's been a little bit of money exchanged, but since there is no major pot, that's the stumbling block. So it's bring your own resources right now and sit down and see if we can come up with some solutions. Now, the approach to things, one of the charges to the hubs is to assist with vulnerability assessment. One of the things I keep trying to transmit to the other agencies is that the IPCC has a definition for vulnerability that I think we need to follow. This is the way my researchers in ARS will be structured to do climate change adaptation, and it's basically that vulnerability is almost like an equation. It's a function of exposure, what parts of agriculture can be affected, plus the sensitivity, how much will agriculture be affected? Is it something you need to take action about, or in terms of switching your emphasis within your production level or your day-to-day management? And then almost a subtraction of adaptive capacity, how you can adjust to moderate the potential damages, take advantage of opportunities, and cope with the consequences. So vulnerability is a function of exposure, sensitivity, and adaptive capacity. When you think about your own research, think about where you fall within these and it'll probably be more than one. But when you take an inventory of what people are doing, mainly what we've been doing in climate change effects and adaptation research is to understand the effects. Okay, let's do some understanding and then build some models and then hopefully build some decision support tools and some widgets that will help land managers make some decisions. How do we strengthen the adaptive capacity? Dr. Hatfield will give a more in-depth talk about this in a second, but we're thinking that there needs to be a better balance between genetic sciences and management to really strengthen our ability to adapt. So we look at the interactions of genetics by management, by environment, and the bottom line is that collaborations are essential. It's going to require us, the scientific community, to start talking to scientists with different disciplinary backgrounds. We will all approach a given problem from our own perspectives. By this approach, hopefully we'll have a little more holistic, systems-level approach, and Dr. Hatfield will fill you in on the details with that. One of the reasons I took on the task of writing that effects and adaptation report, or at least chairing the effort, was that, like I said up front in one of my other slides, the mitigation science is pretty far along. We've made some real strides in understanding things, what affects emissions and carbon sequestration. Adaptation was all over the place. I could see no strategy anywhere. So I'm starting to think that perhaps we need to think in terms of decision trees for decision support. And this G by E by M framework will be a very big part of it. And so each step of the decision tree can be a model or guidelines or even a qualitative understanding of what's happening. And so we have to ask ourselves, what are the models, forecasts, and data needs at each of the decision points? And this is something we're hoping that the hubs will bring together, the options for each one of these, serving as a portal to resources that are out there, whether it be something that someone can use or some of the research. So, how do we judge if we're doing well in terms of adaptation? Well, once again, you look to the literature. The National Academies of Science did a big, thick report on agricultural sustainability in 2010. You can download the full report or read the executive summary. And I like what they did. They defined agricultural sustainability in terms of the goals. Okay, first is satisfy human needs for food, feed, fiber, and contribute to biofuel. And the human needs is not only quantity of food, but the nutritional quality, which is a rising voice that I'm hearing as a natural resources person. I'm actually talking to my colleagues down the hall in the Office of National Programs about conducting experiments that will track what happens to the nutritional value of the crops as it is raised, grown, harvested, and processed and delivered to the table for someone to consume. The second goal is to enhance environmental quality in the resources base. This gets back to that continuing degradation of soil, water, and air resources. Most of you are soil scientists, you know the value of soil health and soil quality. NRCS sees this as a major focus of what they're all about for the next couple of years. Another part is to sustain the economic viability of agriculture. Producers have to make a living. So while we need to increase the amount and the quality of what's being produced, we have to ensure that our producers are staying afloat financially. They have to stay in business. So we have to come up with solutions that fit that model as well. And then the bottom line that some people think is basically a result of the first three goals is enhance the quality of life for farmers, farm workers, and society as a whole. You have to think about the quality of life for the workers out there. If you know any dairy farmers from way back when, they pretty much work around the clock, and if they get a day or two off for vacation a year, it's a rare event. So, that kind of thing, that kind of a model is just not going to work anymore. Another nice thing I like about these goals is that they provide metrics for how well we're doing and, say, adapting to climate change. You can quantify each one of these goals. So I think it's a good way to look at how well we're doing with adaptation. And at least the people that work with me in the hubs will be hearing this quite a bit. So the bottom line, the hubs are supposed to bring together some resources and get us all thinking and talking and provide usable tools to the farmers. I used to think that, you know, being a scientist, we're going to develop this grandiose model. I'm going to be able to run it and then provide solutions with that. I think this decision support in terms of a decision tree is probably the way things are going to go. You may be running a model at each step. You may just be using a qualitative understanding. There may be some other piece of information that you use at each one of those decision nodes. So it's going to require a lot of us. USDA researchers, programs, and field offices to come together to deal with this. The land-grant universities are going to be critical. Nobody has all the resources. Nobody has all the expertise. The private sector has already expressed an interest in working with us. How can they better serve their customers? Producers and land managers, you know, there's a lot of institutional memory out there that we need to capture and work with. State, local, and tribal organizations, I know that's been one of the major tasks that the hub directors and the sub-hub directors have been working on the first year, is to reach out and form some linkages and start the dialogue on what are some of the challenges out there and what are you doing right now to deal with it. And have you realized that some of the things you're dealing with are actually climate related, so there's a long-term issue associated with it. We're linking with the NOAA U.S. and U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service climate change centers. Good dialogue going on there. And then non-government organizations. So the bottom line is collaborations are essential. And it's pretty exciting when you think about it, to be able to talk to other scientists with different disciplinary backgrounds. You learn a lot. You write a lot of papers, which is good for careers, because you have different perspectives to put together. You bring together different types of models, and hopefully it'll move us all forward so we can provide some solutions and keep it going. So the vision for the hubs is a robust and healthy agricultural production and natural resources under increasing climate variability and climate change. So given this structure of the hubs, how they'll operate, and this decision tree approach, and the opportunities for collaboration, I'm going to leave you with a question. Where can your research or your extension activities help make this vision a reality? You know, the hubs are out there. They're going to be looking to you for ideas. Unfortunately, right now it's a bring your own resources. But collectively, I think we can deal with this. I think the brains are out there. The willingness is out there. And if we can get our administrators and political leaders to realize that the capacity is out there, I think we'll make some progress. So where can your research or other activities help make the vision a reality? With that, I close. Thank you.
We have time for a couple of questions. Has there been any interest or thought about carbon market support
in my experience? Okay, the question, has there been any funding opportunities
or in,
okay. Okay, has there been any interest in using the carbon markets or forming them as an opportunity to provide funding for the research? I haven't heard of anything yet. I know the discussions on carbon credit trading are still ongoing. They're not as loud as they used to be. The concern lately is more focused on adaptation. But those discussions are still going on in the background, and it may come to fruition in the future, but I haven't heard anything so far.
John, you want to
Okay, the question is, how will the climate hubs coordinate with NOAA? Universities want to know because they already have strong ties with NOAA. I know there's a lot of interest in questions from NOAA, say, what type of information do you need? What kind of climate information do you need? And there are some good questions that we can ask them in terms of, can you give me this or that? Duration of events, for example, is a tough one. Coordination mechanisms, right now that's left to the hub directors. But, you know, the hubs aren't going to be making climate predictions. They're not going to be doing those projections. So it would be more of a recipient and a request for types of information. And how the dialogue will happen with the universities is, you know, to be determined. So it's open for discussion and any option that's out there. I feel like the hubs are kind of, we're kind of breaking new ground here, because there's so many questions and there's so many people working on these issues. How do we pull things together to eliminate some redundancies and really focus the questions? So. The question had to do with the location-specific needs to adapt to climate change. Things in one place may not work in another. The regions for the hubs that someone else set were set up with that in mind. It was kind of a climate and production for those regions that are going on. So that's the whole motivation behind the regional focus. Like I said, as climate science moves down to a more regional and local level, so does our need to tailor adaptation procedures. So that's pretty much why they're set up the way they are. Still early. Okay. With that,
thank you.
Thank you.